And we're holding on bays, Umud bays, four lines from the bottom. So we started discussing yesterday, our Mishnah had said that there are oves nizikin, which oves implies that there are toldos. So we're trying to figure out with Shabbos, we know that the toldos are like the oves in the sense a person does an av, he's chayav chatos or skila. In the case of a tolda, same thing. But on the other hand, with tumah, we said the toldos are not like the oves because an av tumah can be metame people and kalim, a vlada tumah can be metame only food and drinks. So how is it by nizikin? So the Papa had said some of the toldos of nizikin are like the oves, some are not. So we're in the middle of figuring out what that means. We went through Keren, we went through the Av, where an animal gores with its horns. We established where we see that concept in the Pasuk. We established what are the toldos of it, and we said there's no logical reason to say the toldos are any different than the others. Apparently, they would say whatever applies to the Av of Keren, the fact that, for example, that the animal is tam the first three times and you only pay half nezek, and the fact that after three times you have to start paying nezek sholem, would be the same with Keren and with any of its toldos. So we said maybe the proper statement is referring to shein v'regel, is referring to the damages caused when an animal eats something or when it tramples on something. So let's go through those first of all. So shein v'regel heichaksi. The first question is, where in the Torah does so where in the Torah does it say the concept of shein and regel? So like this. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. The Shilach Zeharegel. Now, the Pasuk goes like this. The Pasuk says, Ki Yaveh Ish Sadeh Kerem, if a person damages a field or a vineyard, the Shilach Es Be'iroi, he sends away, he lets loose his animal, Uvir B'Sdei Acher, and it destroys in another person's field. So then the Pasuk says he has to pay. So let's figure out what Veshilach and Uvir respectively mean. So the Braisa says, Veshilach Zeharegel. The word Veshilach refers to the animal trampling. V'chein hu omer, and we find a pasuk where the word v'shilach, or the same shodesh, is used of walking with the feet. You have v'shalchei regel asher v'achamor. The pasuk refers to those who let go, who let to walk free the ox and the donkey. The context of the pasuk is talking about bracha for the Jewish people. They'll be planting and harvesting a tremendous amount, so the oxen will be able to go free to thresh the grain. The donkeys will be able to go free to carry the grain because they're going to be a huge amount. At the end of the parak, the Gemara is going to bring a drasha on the deeper meaning of that pasuk. Whatever the point is, we see the word meshalche is used in connection with regel. Then uvir zu hashein, when it continues uvir that it destroys, that refers to eating with its teeth. V'chein hu omer kasher yivar ha'golol ad tumoy, as we find in a nevuah to Yeravam, actually to Yeravam's wife, about Yeravam's family, that the whole family is going to be destroyed because of Yeravam's avodah zarah and other averus. The pasuk says, like golol destroys until it's complete. So now, what happens? Golol means the tooth, like the way the tooth of an animal destroys food until it's completely gone. So wait, so it actually gives two explanations. One is that golol refers to the teeth because Moloshin golol, Moloshin revealing. The teeth are sometimes covered and sometimes uncovered because sometimes the animal opens its mouth and you see its teeth and sometimes its mouth is closed and you don't. So therefore, the teeth can be called golol. The second explanation Rashi says is golol means the waste of the animal. Now, how does that get produced? The animal chews food with its teeth and eventually it goes through the whole digestive process and it comes out at the other end as golol. So therefore, golol can be used for the beginning of that process, the animal eating of its teeth, which eventually becomes golol. Rabbeinu Hananel gives, and Tosfos brings in his name, a third possibility. The word golol, we find in Sefer Ezra, that in Aramaic, the word golol means marble. It describes over there how the second Beis Mikdash was built using marble. Well, the teeth are similar to marble in that they're hard like marble, and therefore they can be called golol. Anyway, so therefore, the Braisa says, you see, therefore, that the word uvir, which is the same word in this pasuk, kasha yivair hagolo. So therefore, we see yivair and uvir has to do with teeth. Okay. So now the Gemara says, let's analyze this Braisa. So we're saying, how do we know that v'shilach means the feet? Is because of that pasuk meshalchei. Well, So it sounds like only because the Pasuk says this, only because we have a Pasuk in Nevi'im. So fine. We first, the Gemara had thought yesterday, Divrei Torah Medivrei Kabbalah Lo Yalfinan. Maybe we can't learn something in Torah from something in Nevi'im, because it has to be, Torah is self-contained. You're not going to have that. Hashem says, oops, I forgot to give this detail in the Torah, I better give it in Nevi'im. We know it doesn't work that way. But here it's more Gili Milsa Alma. Here it's just a definition of the term. What is the definition we can see from that Pasuk in Nevi'im? Fine. We have no problem. Yeah, like we said yesterday in connection with Karen. Fine, we have no problem with that. But time of the kasev rachmanim, mashalchei regel, asher v'achamer. You're telling me only because you have a pasuk in Nevi'im that mentions mashalchei in connection with feet. Well, you have to ask anyway. Wouldn't you realize that it is? And if you didn't have that pasuk, what else could you say mashalchei refers to? Ikeren ksiv, ishen ksiv. You're going to say that it refers to the animal goring with its horns. It's clear that the animal is, it's clear the pasuk is referring to something involving an animal, because it says v'shilachas bi'iroi, he sends his animals. So even if we didn't know v'shilach, even if we didn't have a pasuk that said that v'shilach refers to feet, what else could it be referring to? There are three ways in which an animal can damage, three primary ways in which an animal can damage: with its horns, with its teeth by eating, or with its feet by trampling. The horns, it already says in the pasuk earlier. The mouth, we're going to explain soon, when we said in the Braisa that the word veer refers to the mouth. So what else could mashalchei mean if not for feet? So why do we even need a pasuk? Why does the Braisa even need to find a pasuk for it? What else could it mean? If you're going to say it says keren, if that means keren, it already says keren. If you're going to say it means shane, it already says that. And the answer is itzrich. We still need to know that v'shilach means trampling with its feet, because at sakudat chamin, otherwise you would think idi v'idi ashen. Maybe both v'shilach and uvir are referring to the animal eating with its teeth. And the difference is v'hod machal yakarna, hod le machal yakarna. You could argue that there's a difference whether it's destroying the keren or not. Meaning, in other words, so Rashi says, let's say, for example, you can have the grain is growing, you have it at the stage called shachas, where it's not yet, you don't actually have grain on the stalks yet, all you have is the stalks themselves without grain. At that point, if the animal eats it, then that's it. There's no grain stalk anymore. That particular grain stalk is not going to grow back. Next year, when you replant, then you're going to have a grain stalk over there. That would be called mechal yakarna. So you could say one part of the pasuk is referring to that, and the other one is talking about loy mechal yakarna. It hasn't completely destroyed the keren. So meaning, Rashi says, you could have, for example, where the animal went into somebody's field, it ate the plants from particular plot. You have, as a whole, it is going to grow back soon enough. It's not going to grow back as good as it was before, but nevertheless, it won't be completely destroyed like when the animal ate it as shachas. Shachas is the early stage when it's only in stalks. Yeah, when you only have stalks without grain in them. So you could argue, in other words, that maybe the pasuk is telling you whether the animal destroyed the plant completely, or whether it didn't destroy it completely. It just nibbled at it, and now it is going to continue growing. It just won't be as strong and as full and whatever as it was before. Either way, you have to pay. You could have argued that. And therefore, you need to know that v'shilach, no, does not refer to shein at all. It refers rather to regel, to a different type of damage, namely where it tramples. Now, that's how Rashi learns machal yakarna versus loy machal yakarna. Tosfos objects to that and says, wait, we're saying that when the animal eats shachas, then that's machal yakarna, because now it's not going to grow back. I mean, after all, you have, and we're saying, on the other hand, if the animal nibbles on the plants, you could argue, on the other hand, I mean, the owner himself also can harvest it at some point like that. And then he gains from it, that he could harvest the plant, he could feed it to his animal, and then he could plant something else over there. So in that case, how can you call it machal yakarna versus loy machal yakarna, depending what stage of the plant the animal ate it? Rather, Tosfos says that no, what it means is, let's say you could have where the animal did not eat the plants at all, but rather, for example, it made them dirty. We're going to talk about further down on the Omud, tinfa peiros lana osa, that the animal, for example, let's say it went in there and it excreted waste onto the peiros. So it's having hana'ah from it. In that sense, it is like shein, because shein is where an animal damages peiros and it has hana'ah from it. Unlike we learned yesterday, keren, it has no hana'ah. So this would be considered a tolda of shein. So now, So you could argue then that you have two ways within Shane itself. You have one where it destroys the plants completely by eating them, and then you have another one that doesn't actually destroy them, but for example, it dirties them by excreting waste all over them.
Rain doesn't wash it off. Huh?
The rain may wash it off. You're still not going to want to feed those. You're still not going to want to eat those plants yourself. At most, you might use them for animal food or something. And you could also have, let's say, for example, what if the fruit was already picked? What if it was already picked and is drying in the field or whatever? The point is, you could have maybe thought to make that distinction, and therefore we need to be told that the shilach actually refers to the feet of the animal trampling. Okay, so
Is
therefore,
there some way that we're going to learn that with a certain behavior, like a shark eats and pulls out the roots, and that ruins it for good?
I don't think we're going to really talk about that. But there is that concept that actually mentions it at the beginning of Parshas Bullock, that yeah, when an ox eats grass, then there's no hana, it doesn't regrow afterwards because it pulls out the roots. That's true, yeah. But yeah, I don't think we're going to be making that distinction. But yeah, okay. So Kamash Malan, therefore, that is why the Braisin needed to tell us that the word v'shilach refers to trampling with its feet. Okay. Well, the Gemara says, regel. Well, okay, so if we say that Vashilach does refer to the feet, and by the way, both Rashi and Tosfos add the detail. Now, you could argue, so what? Why do we need two psukim? Why would the Gemara even think that we need two psukim, one for Mechal Yekauna, one for not? Let it only say that you're chayev to pay when loy Mechal Yekauna, and you would realize by a Kavach Choymer that certainly if Mechal Yekauna, certainly if the whole plant has been destroyed, or then and for sure you have to pay. So they Rashi and Tosfos both explain that if you only had one pasuk, maybe you would think it refers only to the case of Mechal Yekauna. Maybe you would think, okay, that the Torah, after all, is not spelling out in so many words Mechal Yekauna versus not. So if you only had one, then you would say that maybe you're only chayav to pay only when the whole plant has been destroyed. You wouldn't realize that if the animal only nibbled on the plant or dirtied it, like Tosfos says, that you should be liable to pay. Therefore, the Gemara thought maybe you need two psukim to tell us, and was saying that no, the Torah does not in fact need two psukim. It's saying only one psukim. Well, then the question becomes, regel. Well, then, yeah, if we're saying that v'shilach refers to regel, shein d'le mechal yekauna minolan. Well, then, where do we know that a person is liable for paying for shein if it was loy mechal yekauna? Maybe, in fact, we should argue. Yeah, if the animal ate the plant completely and there's nothing of it left, then you're liable to pay. But if the animal only nibbled on it and it is going to continue growing, as Rashi said, it just won't be as good as before. Or like Tosfos said, the animal dirtied the plant. And after all, like you said, the rain will wash it off or whatever. And it may not be as good quality as it was before. Maybe, Taka, you shouldn't be required to pay at all. How do we know that's not the case, given that we should assume that Shane maybe only refers to where it destroyed the plant completely? And now you're telling me the Shilach, which was the other pasuk that you thought might refer to not destroying completely, in fact refers to a different Avnei Zikin. So the answer is Dumya deRegel. The answer is because in that sense we're going to compare Shane to Regel. Ma regel loishna mechal yekauna veloishna mechal yekauna veloishna loy mechal yekauna. When it comes to the foot trampling on something, it doesn't matter whether mechal yekauna or not. And after all, in fact, a regel, the Rashba points out, is not always mechal yekauna. Many times, what is regel? The animal tramples on something and breaks it or whatever. Not always does it break it completely into smithereens and there's nothing left. It might just damage it. And yet, it's clear the Torah is mechayev either way. For that matter, if an animal's trampling a field, it doesn't mean that the field is not completely ruined forever. It just means that right now the plowing or whatever that you did over there needs to be redone. So it's loy mechal yekauna afshein loy shna mechal yekauna v'loy shna loy mechal yekauna. The same way, logically, we can say by shein also, since the Torah is putting them together, then the same rule would apply. So we don't need, after all, a second pasuk to tell us that by shein loy mechal yekauna a person is required to pay, because the same way as by regel is not always mechal yekauna, and yet a person is required to pay. Okay, so that takes care of that then. So now we know what v'shilach means, and we know that we have a pasuk to teach us the concept of regel. Now, what about now? Omamar, we continued in the Braisa, yiva'er zu hashein. We said the word yiva'er in the pasuk in Parashas Mishpatim refers to the animal eating with its teeth, as we have the pasuk in connection with Yeravam, as the golol eats until it destroys it, and to which we said three possibilities what golol means in this connection, but all of them have this in common, that they refer to eating. So again, let's go through the same logic. So you're telling me the Braise is saying only because you have that posik kasha yivar hagolo, only because of that do we know that uvir refers to eating. Well, if not, and if we didn't have that posik, what would we say that yivar refers to? Again, it obviously refers to something involving animal, because that's v'shilachas b'iroi. If you're talking about damages involving keren, we already covered that in Udyur Psukim. If you're talking about rego, we already covered that with the word v'shilach. So what else could it mean? Necessarily, uvir has to mean eating, because what else could it possibly mean? And the answer is itzrich. There is a chidush in it, why we need the posikasha, yivar ha-golo, and why the braisa has to tell us, you could argue that maybe both Vashilach and Uvir refer to damages of Regal, but you could say you could distinguish maybe between whether the animal went on its own, so your animal went to somebody else's field and started grazing and eating, versus where you actually sent it in there. Maybe the posik would need to tell you both whether you actually sent it in there or whether it just went in there itself. You can't say, well, if it went in there itself, not my fault. Like we were talking about yesterday, maybe it's your responsibility to have a fence around your property or something. Nope. If we tried to use a kavachomer, maybe we would say, if we only had one posik, we would say maybe it only refers to the case of sholach shaluchi. You actually sent your animal to somebody else's property, sure, you're liable to pay. But when the animal wandered in there by itself, maybe you could argue, well, I can't help it, I can't be on top of my animals 24/7. Kamash Malan, therefore, you could argue that the posik has to tell us two things, b'shilach and uvir, to make it clear that that you're chayev whether the animal went in there alone, which is uvir, or whether you sent it in there, which is v'shilach. Therefore, you need to be told that it's not like that. Tosfos also adds a detail, by the way. The fact is, we're saying that you have the posik kasha yivar hagolol ad tumah, and because of that, we're saying that it means shame. We have the question at this point. If you're gonna think that maybe the Torah is only telling you that you chayev when you send your animal in, well then what would be what would you be using the word uvir for? If you thought that maybe a person is chayev only if he sends his animal in, so Tosfos says what it means is the Braise is saying if it didn't say v'shilach, then we would have learned only from kasha yivar hagolol. Now that we have both v'shilach uvir, so it's clear it can't mean only one of them. It's clear it has to mean both of them. So now the question is. So v'hashted uki ashein. Well, then if we're saying that the word uvir refers to shein. Regal de Oslam Amela Manolon. Well, then, how do we know that if the foot of the animal goes in there on its own, then Hataka, maybe you should say that since you only have Vashilach to refer to feet, maybe in fact Vashilach after all means that he sends it. So maybe he's Taka only Chayiv if he sends the animal in to graze in somebody else's field. How would we know that he's Chayiv even if it goes in there on its own? And the answer is Dumya to Shane. The same way as before we compared Shane to Regal, now we're going to do it the other way around. We're going to compare Regal to Shane. Ma Shane, lo shno shtalcha shaluchi, lo shno de ozum amela. When it comes to the tooth of the animal, we're saying that it makes no difference whether you sent it in there or whether it went on its own, because we're saying the word uvir alone without v'shilach. First we said maybe v'shilach and uvir refer to the animal eating. Now we're saying that no, v'shilach refers to rego. Uvir refers to eating, and there's nothing in the word uvir that implies that you sent in the animal. So therefore, by uvir in itself, it's clear that it means no matter how the animal got in there, either way you chayev. So just like by Shane, makes no difference. Loishna shalcha shaluchi, loishna the ozum amela, doesn't matter whether you sent it in or it went in on its own. Afrego loishna shalcha shaluchi, loishna ozum amela. And the same thing by the foot, it doesn't matter, even though it does use the word vashilach, and you could argue that maybe vashilach means he sent it in. But no, the comparison with Shane tells us it's not so. Either way, you're going to be equally well chayav, whether you actually sent it in or whether you just let it go, or whether it just went on its own. A couple of them, Mefarshim point out, by the way, the word v'shilach, that form of the verb, if it said v'sholach, that would mean he would see sent. V'shilach really means more he let go. So it doesn't actually mean that he actually sent the animal and told it go in there and eat. It just means that he let it go. He wasn't shomer it properly. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about, for example, a person watches his animal properly and it goes out ba'onus and causes damage. Then you can argue that he's potter. You can have in Perek HaKonis, for example, if there was a wall over there and robbers tore it down and he went and then the animal went and caused damage. That's something else. But it's his responsibility to watch the animal and make sure that it's not v'shilach, that it's not let loose to go and graze in somebody else's field. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says, v'shilach. Okay, so then why doesn't the Torah only write the word v'shilach and not write the word ubir at all? D'mashma regel, mashma shein. After all, the word v'shilach all by itself can refer to both shein and regel. Before we said that it refers to regel because of the pasuk m'shalchei regel asher v'achamer. But we can actually find a pasuk that mentions v'shilach in connection with the tooth as well. Regel, mashma regel, mashma regel, the tib m'shalchei regel asher v'achamer, u'mashma shein. But equally well, that same word can refer to shein, d'chtib v'shein behemes ha'shalach bam. We find in Hazinu, where Hashem warns that one of the things that's going to happen if the people are not keeping mitzvahs is Hashem says, I will let loose against them the teeth of animals. So we see that, and it uses the word ashalach, which is the same form of the verb as well, that it means Hashem will let them loose. So we see that the word v'shilach refers to animals as well. Now, Tosfos points out it is true that in context, the Sifri actually explains that that pasuk is primarily referring to poisonous, venomous animals, that they're going to, for example, snakes and other things like that. But still, the fact is, it also includes wild animals. Now, a snake, when it bites somebody, it's not necessarily getting hana from it. Eventually, I guess, its prey dies and can eat it, but then it can eat it, but it doesn't get hana from the biting itself. You have, after all, the pasuk tells us that we can taste it like dirt. You have a Gemara in Tainis where the Gemara says all the animals gather together to talk to the snake, and they say, "What's going on? All the rest of us, we kill for pleasure. You are killing stamazoi without getting anything out of it." And the snake answers, "No." So think of a Baal Lashon Hara who also bites people without getting hana from it, and so therefore, so I'm in this world in order to deal with the Baal Lashon Hara. So anyway, the point is that but still, Tosfos says the fact is that pasuk doesn't just include snakes and other venomous creatures like that. It does also include wild animals, for example, lions and other things like that, that kill for their hana, and therefore that is considered in the category of shame. Later on, by the way, in the parak, later on, we're going to talk about that such creatures, wild animals, are considered mu'ad la'olam. But nevertheless, when we say that, unlike an ox, which is tam the first few times and eventually becomes mu'ad, if a person keeps a pet lion, for example, it's mu'ad to begin with. Nonetheless, Tosfos discusses later on in the Perek that those animals still, when they, if they do damage, it's not considered part of Keren, it is considered part of Shein, for the reason we're saying over here. Because after all, when a lion kills, it is normal for it to do so, and it's doing it not out of anger, it's doing it just because it's hungry. So therefore, that would be part of Shein. So therefore, the same way over here, when we say the Pasuk in Hazinu, of a Shein behemoth, a Shalach Bam, can also refer to wild animals. So then in that case, that would be shame. So again, the question is, why do we even need the word uvir at all? Let the Torah just say v'shilach es bi'ira b'sdei acher, and we would understand that v'shilach can have a double meaning. It can mean regel, because m'shalchei regel asher v'achamer. It can also mean shame, because v'shein behem es shalach bam.
So you learn two things out of one.
Well, that's the Gemara's answer. Ilav kro yisera. No, because you could argue if you didn't have the extra pasuk, the extra word in the pasuk, have amina oiha oiha, then you would think maybe it's one or the other. Oy regel the hazekai matsui. You could argue that maybe it's more logical to include regel because regel is a much more common kind of damage. An animal walks anywhere; it's going to trample on things, it's going to break things as it walks. It's a more normal thing. Shein is not always. An animal may not be particularly hungry right now, and therefore it's not as rare as Karen, of course, but it's not quite as common as regel. Or Oshen de Yeshanol Hazekoi. Or you could argue maybe it's more logical to say that the pasuk is referring only to Shein. Shein has an advantage over regel in that the animal has hana from it. When the animal eats something, it enjoys it, as opposed to wriggle. It's not stepping on something because it wants to. It's just that's the normal way. So you could argue if you only had one pasuk, it means either one or the other. So therefore, that's why you need two pasukim, two words in the pasuk. The Gemara says, why? Mechti shkul in hen v'yavoyu shneihem. Why? Given that each one has an advantage over and a disadvantage compared to the other one, then it comes out both of them are really equally balanced, so we should be able to learn both of them. Meaning, in other words, sometimes the Gemara will do that. Sometimes the Gemara will point out, it's true, usually we don't learn two things from one pasuk, but sometimes we have, there's really no logical basis to say that we should include one and exclude the other. We certainly can't exclude both of them, that Ashba points out, otherwise what's the pasuk even there for? There's no logical reason if you were to say that it includes Shane and not Regal, or only Regal and not Shane, why would you say that? What would make you think that it's one more than the other? Therefore, in cases like that, you can say Shkul and Hen, V'yavoyu Shneihem, they're both equally balanced, each one. There's a reason to think that it should be included, and so we end up including both of them. So you could argue that, yes, you have one word and you're going to learn two things from it, maybe. So again, why do you need two different words in the pasuk? Because after all, which one are you going to exclude? Whichever one you exclude, you would argue that's not the one. You should be excluding the other one. And again, you obviously can't say you're excluding both of them because then the pasuk is not telling you anything at all. So shouldn't it be good enough to have one word? And the answer is still, it's you still need two words, sakra ad hamina, because otherwise you would think, again, only if you sent the animal, you would think maybe in other words, v'shilach would refer to both Shane and Regal, but still, given that the word v'shilach, the simple meaning of it, does mean to send or to let loose, still, maybe it only applies if you actually sent it. But if it went on its own, maybe that wouldn't apply, kamash malon, and therefore we need to be told both. Now, here's where Tosfos points out, so I said it out before, actually, but it really belongs over here, that again, if we only had the word v'shilach, we could conceivably use it to mean both Shane and Regal, but we would think that it applies only when he sends it, and therefore we have two. But again, you could ask that in that case, why do we need Uvir to be defined as Shane with the word kasher yivar hagolad tumay? And the answer is that, like we said before, if it did not say v'shilach, then we would need Uvir. We'd need to learn from kasher yivar hagol. Now that it says v'shilach, and it's clear that the word v'shilach itself can mean both of them. However, by itself, it could also mean they have to send them, and therefore you have the word Uvir to clarify that it does not mean that, even if it went on its own, now you don't really need the limud kash from kasha yivara golad tumay anymore, because already you have both of them are included from the word v'shilach alone, and uvir is only coming to clarify that it applies even if you didn't send them.
So you do need both.
So you do need ultimately both words in the pasuk, but not like the Braisa was saying, so Tosfos is learning, not like the Braisa was saying that one of them refers to Shane and that one of them refers to Regal and the other to Shane. In fact, one word by itself, v'shilach, can refer to both, but v'shilach by itself could also mistakenly leave us with the impression that it's only if you send it, the word ovir makes it clear that regardless, as long as there's damage, then you chayim.
But same possibility
because you compare one to the other, but not that you actually need the word uvir to be related to the word kasha yivar hagolo to include Shane, because it's true you could include Shane from the word v'shilach itself. Okay, so that takes care of how we know Shane and Regal in the pasuk. Now that we established that, now so again the reason why we're bringing all this in over here is because we're trying to figure out what Rapapa had said. Rav Papa had said that among the toldos of the Ovis Nezikin, some of them are like their Av, and some of them are not. We're trying to figure out which toldos are like the Av, and which ones are not. So first we have to know where it says this particular Nezik in the Torah. So we have to work out how we know that Shane says and that how we know that Karen says in the Torah. Does it actually say the word Karen in those psukim? Shane and Regal, we just finished working out how we know that. Now let's figure out what the toldos of Shane and Regal are respectively, and then we'll see whether it's possible to apply a proper statement to any of those toldos. Is there any of those toldos that we can logically say that there's a reason why that tolda should be different than the av in terms of the consequences, in terms of whether he has to pay nezek shalom or chatzi nezek, or whether there's a concept of tam and muad in it, etc. So the Gemara says, tolda to Shane Mayhi, what are the toldos of Shane? Again, now that we established the underlying definition of Shane is something that the animal often does and it gets hana out of. So it's not quite as often as Lego, maybe, but it's still common enough that an animal will eat things and that it's getting hana out of it, as opposed to keren, we said, which is a rare thing where it gets no hana out of. And as opposed to rego, we said, which is even more common than chain, but also the animal gets no hana out of it. So anything where the animal gets hana out of it, we're going to put it under the category of chain. So
it's the middle category right now,
right? So those are, so that the tulbas of it then are, if an animal rubs itself against the wall for its hana, so the animal is itchy and it rubs against the wall and knocks down the wall, that would be a tulba of shame. Now, for example, later on in the Masech there, it talks about, let's say, for example, the animal is angry and it rubs again, it knocks against the wall and bangs it in order to knock it down, that would be a tulba of keren. Because there it's not getting hana out of it. Here we're talking about that it's just, it's not meaning to knock down the wall. It wants to rub itself and then accidentally it knocks it down. Another example would be the tin for peiros lahanasa would be where it dirtied peiros for its hana. Like we said before, that it happens to be standing on top of peiros. It goes to the bathroom and then emits waste on top of the peiros. Again, it's getting hana out of it that now it's relieved of its load.
Oh, that's what I didn't know. Is that not
that's what, right. Okay, so then we have to ask, well, then what's the difference? Shane has this in common. It has hana from the hezek that it's doing. The animal is your mamon, and you are responsible to watch the animal and make sure that it doesn't do this. Well, hani nami. Then these two things that we said also, yesh hana la'azek and mamon cho shmirasei alacha. All these also, it should be exactly the same thing. There's no logical reason to say that when it comes to shame, you should have one consequence, and when it comes to nishakka b'kosel or tin for peiros, you should have a different one.
If it eats, then you don't have to feed it. Whereas other things, you're not really having enough.
Well, I mean, when it comes to nisakka, for example, now you don't have to rub the animal down, but fine. But that's another matter. It's true. Later on in the Masechta, when we talk about how you pay for shein, it's true. We're going to talk about you have the hana that the animal had versus the hezek. Not always are those the same thing, because, for example, you could have that the animal ate something. You could have the animal ate very expensive food, for example, from the point of not so much idis as in the value of the property, but the value of the actual food that it ate. The animal could eat some very expensive food in terms of the hana, in terms of the nutrition. It's exactly the same as if it had been cheaper food, but in terms of the hezek to the other guy, it's a greater hezek. Yeah, we're going to talk about such things later in the Masechta, but still, there's no logical reason to say that with Shane, there should be nezek sholem, and with the other ones, there should only be chatzi nezek or something. So obviously you can't say, so Ella told the Shane for Shane. Rather, we have to say all tuldas of Shane are just like Shane. Whatever applies to Shane is going to apply to those two as well. So therefore, let's say maybe the Papa's statement about that some of the tuldas are not like the others, maybe he's referring to a tulda of regal. Okay, well, let's work that out. Tulda the regal mai. What are examples of tulda of regal? So that would be, for example, he's zika b'gufa derech hilucha. If the animal caused damage with its body as it's walking by, so regal itself means it stepped on something and broke it. Now, let's say you could have the animal is walking by, it's brushing by, and as it brushes by, it bangs into something and knocks it over. Again, it's not meaning to, unlike Karen, where we said it's pushing. Here, it's just walking by in its normal way, and it knocks something over. Or b'sara derech hilucha, similarly, you could have with its hair. So Rashi describes, let's say, for example, you could have a Kaylee accidentally got tangled or stuck to its hair, and then it's walking along, and it drags it along, and eventually the Kaylee breaks. Or the Shlifshalah, you could have, for example, where the animal causes damage using the bundle, using the package, using the load that's on its back. So imagine you have the animal is walking down the street carrying a load, and then one of the ropes or something that the load is attached with gets tangled in something, and the thing ends up breaking.
But walking in a place where it's allowed, where it's supposed to.
Yeah, that's fine. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about where exactly regal is chayev and where it's not. Regal is not chayev in Rosh Hashanah, because in Rosh Hashanah, you have a right to have your animals walking there. It's the other guy's responsibility to make sure that his kalim or peiros or what have you aren't in the way. But yeah, but still, you could be talking about, let's say, on a side street or whatever later on, as we talk about where regal applies exactly, you could have that, yeah, it's walking by, carrying a load, and that load accidentally snags on something and breaks it. The prumia shabapia, you could have, for example, that something gets caught on the bit in the animal's mouth, the zug shabat sabara, or on the bell that's around its neck. So all of those are tulda of regal. Well, so you're going to say then that maybe some of those are different than the av. Why? Again, Mishnah regel the hezek matzri. What's the difference? Regel, the definition of regel is it's a very common hezek. Mamoncha, and the animal and all of its gear is your mamon or shmirasa alacha, and you're responsible to guard it. Hani nami hezek and matzri mamoncha or shmirasa alacha. So the same thing is true as far as all these other things. Ela, no. You're right, toldot to regel karegel. Obviously, all these toldos of regel have the same din as regel, just like by regel, and for that matter, by shame. There's no difference between tam and muad. The animal is always considered muad for these things, and there's always nezek sholem, so it is also with each of these other things. If the animal causes damage with one of these things. So, v'chikom and a papa told the bird. So fine, let's try then that a proper statement about the tortoise being different than the others is maybe talking about the nezek of bur. So bur, the classic example of bur, as it says in the Torah, is a person digs a pit in Rosh Hashanah and then an animal falls into it. So let's consider tortoise the bur, mind you. Now here the Gemara doesn't have to ask where we know the concept of bur because the pasuk clearly says the word bur. By Karen and by Shane and Regal, the Torah didn't clearly use those words, and therefore we had to work out how we know that they're implied in the Pesukim. Bur and Eish, which is the next one the Gemara is going to deal with, it actually says the word Bur in the Pesukim, it actually says the word Eish in the Pesukim. Fine. So, Tolda the Bur, my new. What is a Tolda of Bur? So, like this. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to establish that in order for the Torah deals with the case where that primarily where an animal falls into the Bur and gets killed. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to discuss the point that for that to happen, the burr has to be at least 10 tefachim deep. Less than 10 tefachim, we assume, is not capable of causing the death of an animal. If the animal dies nonetheless, then it means it wasn't your burr that was completely at fault. There was some other factor involved. The animal had a weak heart or something, and you're not completely responsible.
Does that be 4x4x4?
Doesn't have to necessarily be 4x4. I mean, it has to be big enough for the animal to fall into, obviously. But yeah, we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta, in the fifth perek, we're going to deal with the question how we're going to deal with the question. There are actually two different ways of looking what exactly it is about the bird that kills. Is it the fall, or is it stale air, or is it the stale air that's in the bird that the animal, therefore, is suffocating and can't breathe? Well, we're going to deal with that in more detail later in the Masechta.
The skins, the
The fright or whatever, but that's yeah. Anyway, but that would be more the fright would be more a matter of grum. We're talking about we want something that's the direct cause of death. Anyway, so you're going to say like this: Eve lema av yud v'tol the test. You're going to argue that what it means is the av of bur is where you have a bur that's 10 tefachim deep, and the tolda of it is where the bur is only 9 tefachim deep, and you're going to say. When it comes to 9, a person is only chayiv for the hezek to the animal. So if the animal breaks its leg, then you're chayiv to pay for that. But if the animal dies, you're not chayiv to pay for the death of the animal. So you could argue maybe 9 is considered a tolda. Well, on Beis Amon Aleph, at the beginning, we said that the definition of av versus tolda in Ovis Nezikin is the av is what's mentioned clearly in the pasuk, the tolda is not. Well, you have to ask, loy tes ksivi, v'loy yod ksivi. The fact is, the Torah never says anything about 10 tefachim or 9 tefachim. So how can you call one of them an av and one of them a tolda? So the Gemara says, "Hole kasha." Fine, that's not such a problem. After all, the Torah, after all, uses the expression "the dead animal will belong to the mazik." Later on in the Masechta, we're going to work out the details of. In other words, what happens is that the animal, let's say, when it was alive, was worth 200 zuz. Now, after it's dead, the dead body is worth, let's say, only 20 zuz. So what we do is we say the 20, so the value of 20 right now goes towards the mazik, and then goes towards the nizik, and then the mazik has to pay another 180. The mazik is the one who caused the damage. So Reuven digs a burr, Shimon's shur falls into it and gets killed. So what we're saying is Reuven takes the dead body. He's responsible for schlepping the dead body out of the animal, out of the burr. Then he says, look, Shimon, this body is worth $20 at this point. You could use it as animal food, for example. It's worth $20. So now I owe you another 180. And it works that way. So the pasuk makes it clear you're talking about where the animal was killed. So therefore, so since it says, "V'hamesi yaloi v'kim lohu l'rabbanon yud avdan misa tes nizik and avdi misa loy avdi," and the chachamim know for a fact that only a bird 10 tefachim or deeper is capable under normal circumstances of causing the death of the animal. Where if it's less than 10, under normal circumstances, it's not going to cause the death of the animal. So therefore, Reuven can say, I know I dug this burr, but it's not completely my fault that your animal fell in only 8 or 9 tefachim and died. That's not something normal to expect. And I shouldn't be chayiv for the death of the animal. No, so that's what we're trying to figure out. No, so we're saying that, no, the fact is, Misa Loi Abia does not cause, under normal circumstances, Misa, and therefore you can argue, I'm only chayav for the Nezikin. If the animal was damaged, if the animal broke its leg or something, sure, I'll have to pay for that, but not, I shouldn't have to pay for the whole fact the animal died. So you could argue, therefore, it's true the Torah doesn't say the word ten tefachim, but once the Torah says that we're talking about a dead animal, the Chachamim figured out that dead automatically equals ten tefachim, and therefore you could argue maybe that the Pasuk is implying, therefore, there's a difference between ten. So the Pasuk is implying the word ten, and then we would say, therefore, ten is considered an av, because it's implied in the Pasuk, whereas nine, which is not implied in the Pasuk at all, because the Pasuk doesn't even talk about the animal getting injured, then you would say that's a Torah.
But again, even the 10 doesn't say mefodesh.
No, but it doesn't say mefodesh, but we're saying since the Pasuk mentioned the animal dying, that's equivalent of saying that there was 10, because with less than 10, you're not going to have death. So you could argue that way. The problem with that is, soif zeh av lemisav, zeh av lemezakin. Still, ultimately, though, you still have, each one is an av in its own way. The 10 tefach bur is an av in the sense that if the animal falls in there and gets killed, then Reuven, the owner of the bur, is chayav. When it comes to a 9 tefach bur, then yeah, it's true if it dies, he's potter, but if the animal gets injured, he's chayav. And after all, again, the posuk is implying, by saying v'hames yeloi, implying that a smaller bur is capable also of causing damage, but not actually saying so in so many words. So if you're going to say that 10 tefachim is implied in the posuk, so is 9 tefachim implied in the posuk. Because by saying v'hames yeloi, the posuk is implying, here is the din when the animal dies, and then implying also, and here is the din when the animal only gets injured. That's Rashi's first lashon. Then Rashi gives a second explanation that since the pasuk says the nafal shama shor chamer, that an ox or a donkey falls in there, that itself implies that you could have that it gets injured versus that it dies. So then you could have, so fine, if the animal dies in 9 tefachim, then it wasn't because of the bur. But if it got damaged, and after all, the pasuk does say v'nafal shama, it falls in there, that alone should imply that we're talking about the case where an animal gets injured, which would be less than 10 tefachim. So therefore, so that you could say each one is an av, because each one is being implied in a different way in the pasuk. Tosfos then has yet another explanation of the flow of the Gemara. Tosfos explains that without being told the size of the burr, usually we would assume a burr is much deeper than 10 tefachim. The point of a burr is you're using it as a storage place for water. That's the usual purpose of a burr, is to store water. You're going to usually dig it much deeper than 10 tefachim, because you want to have a nice size supply of water. So therefore, Tosfos explains the flow of the Gemara then, In that way, if the Torah had said the word bur, then you would think it means only if it's much deeper than 10 tefachim. If it only said v'hames yaloi, then you would think that no matter how the animal dies, even if it was a shallow bur. So therefore, so we're saying that the word bur in and of itself can mean 10 tefachim, but once it says can mean deeper than 10 tefachim, but once it says v'hames yaloi, then it's clear 10 tefachim or deeper. And then, though, again, you could argue that maybe. But if you're only learning from the 10 from the Svara of Ames Yaloi, then you could argue that 9 is also implied, again, like Rashi says in the second Lashon, because of a Nafal Shama. The point is, in other words, so therefore it wouldn't be a Tolda, therefore it would be implied also as an Av. The same way as, let's say, with 39 Obis Malachas of Shabbos, not all of them are listed in the Pesukim. We learn most of them from considering, most of the Obis we learn by considering what was done in the Mishkan. So something that's from an implication of a Pesuk can also be considered an Av. So then why would we say that 10 would be considered an Av and 9 would be considered a Tolda? So it can't be. Rames Yaloi would imply, Rames Yaloi would imply 10, but you also have the Nafal Shoma, which would imply 9. So Ella Avne Sakine Masoi Bishinichan Bishusaram Viziku. Rather, we can say the tolda of a burr refers to, for example, a person put a rock or a knife or a load in Rishosarabim, he left them on the ground, Vihiziku, and they caused damage, a person or an animal tripped over them. Person, actually, we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about if a person is injured by a bird, then there's no chiyuv for the owner of the bird, because a person is expected to be more careful. We're going to talk about that concept later in the Masechta. But fine, an animal, let's say. So you left a rock, and an animal tripped over it and got injured or killed. So then you could say that's a tolda of bird. Well, the question is, heichi dami. Well, what's the scenario? Later on in the Masechta, in the third perek, we're going to deal with the case of what happens. A person left something in Rosh Hashanah and then and declared it hefker. So you can discuss the case. We're going to have in the third perek, for example, that a person himself tripped in Rosh Hashanah and dropped something, for example. And now, let's say, for example, he dropped a keli and it broke. And now you have the shards of it all over the place. So you could talk about whether he was master them or whether he was not. So we have to figure out, what's the scenario? If he decided to be maskir this walk or whatever, well, then according to Rav or Shmuel, that is exactly the case of Burr, because they explain like this. What is the case of Burr? A Burr is Rishos Rabim. Now, Rishos Rabim doesn't belong to you. So what happened? You dug a pit in Rosh Hashanah and you were master it. You said, you know what? I dug this burr. I intend that the public should be able to use it for water. I'm being master it for all the B'nai Rosh Hashanah that anybody can freely take from the water in it. Okay. Nevertheless, the Torah is still machai of you because you didn't cover it. Right. So if a person is maskir anything that any obstacle that he leaves in Rosh Hashanah, then that's considered part of burr, according to both Rav and Shmuel. So then in that case, then we can't consider it. So there's no reason to think. So fine, those are a tolda, but there's no reason to think those should be any different than the av. Same way a person is chayev for his bur, obviously the same way he has to be chayev for these things as well. Now, Tosfos also points out, again, when we talk about later in the Masechta, about the reason behind a burr, what is it about the burr that kills? Is it the bang, the fact that the animal bangs against the bottom of it and that kills it? Or is it the stale air over there? Well, when you're talking about Avnei Sakidu Masor, there's no stale air. But nevertheless, Tosfos says, fine, the difference is, because there you could argue, Rav argues over there, why can't you be mechayev him for the fact that the animal banged on the bottom of the burr? Because ultimately that ground doesn't belong to you, it's karka olam. So therefore, the only thing you could be mechayev for is the fact that the burr, you dug a burr, and now the burr is narrow, and the air in there is stale, and therefore the animal suffocated. Here, we're talking about a rock that you yourself put in, Rosh Hashanah. It's not kaupa olam. So even Rav would agree that in that case, if the animal trips over it and gets killed, then therefore the person is chayev. But then there's no logical reason to distinguish that between that and burr. And v'idaloy afkirinu, if you did not make the rock or the knife or whatever hefker, well then, you have a machlokas about that. According to Shmuel, who says over there that even that, we're going to learn from Burr. Shmuel says, even though it is true that by definition a Burr is hefker, nevertheless, the same din applies to things that are not hefker. So then according to him, and those are a tool to a Burr, and the same din of Burr should apply to them. The Ila Rav to Amakulam Mishur Lamanu Hanu Shur. And according to Rav, who says we learn them all from Shur, Rav would distinguish over there and say a burr by definition has to be Hefker. If you weren't Mafker it, then it's the equivalent of Shur because it's your Mammon. So then Hainu Shur. Well, then in that case, then in that case, it's the same as Shur. And we already established that the Tolda of Shur is like Shur. So again, why would we? So what would Rapapa's statement be referring to? Because after all, we could say, Maishna burr, shaken tchila sasiyosi lenezek, when you first make a burr, it's something that could conceivably cause damage, and it is your mamon. Okay, in the case of a burr, it's not necessarily your mamon, because the fact is that a burr you made hefker, but nevertheless, the point is that in many cases, it is your mamon, ushmir osei alecha, and you are responsible to guard it. So Hani Nami, when you put a rock or a knife or whatever in Rosh Hashanah, same thing. Tchilas Asiyas on Nezek. It's also something that to begin with is a potential Nezek. The Umma Moincha, and it's your Mamun or Shmiras and Alecha, and you're responsible to guard it. So Ella, no, Tulda de Bur Kabur. It's clear that any of the Tuldas of Bur, however we define it, is going to be exactly like Bur. Whatever chi of a person has for a Bur, exactly the same thing is going to be with these obstacles. And that includes, again, all the various dinim. It includes that there's no such thing as Tam versus Muad. Obviously, when you're talking about inanimate objects, you can't distinguish between Tam and Muad.
You speak about what?
When he's talking about inanimate objects, things that don't move, a rock or a knife or whatever is not a living creature. You can't distinguish between Tam and Muad. So he's chayiv even the first time Nezek Sholem. It would also include the concept that we mentioned before, that burr does not apply to a person. For example, if a person falls over or trips over a burr, then you're potter. Only an animal would you be chayiv. For that matter, kalim as well. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta that the concept of burr applies only to an animal, not to kalim. So if kalim fall into a burr and break, then you're also potter. The same thing is going to apply to each of these other things. Agav, somebody was pointing out to me a few days ago, that when you think about it, let's say, for example, so if you leave your car door open and another car goes and another car goes and bangs into it, you could argue that that car door is a burr. You could, it's not a sure, because the car is not a living thing. You would have an example over there of the, you would have an example over there of the hezek of burr, and therefore the rule of Kalin might not apply. So if somebody else's car got damaged because it banged into your door, not necessarily would you be chayev to the and halacha for the damage to their car, because that would be Kalin that were damaged by a burr. It's an interesting chat. Anyway, so told the broken bird, the chika omra papa told the mother. Fine. So now we have one last possibility. Now maybe the papa's statement about the toldus not being like the others, maybe it's referring to toldus of mother, which was one of the four others in the zikin that we said in the Mishnah. Well, my nihu. Well, we have to ask, what is the definition of mave, first of all? Further down on the Amud, we're going to have a machloikus. Ila Shmuel dam mave zushen. Shmuel holds that the word mave refers to the animal eating, which we talked about on Amud Aleph. Well, then, ha'o kibna, tolda shen kashen. Well, then, we already said that all the toldas of shen, for example, the animal scratching against a wall and knocking it down or whatever, are all exactly like shen, because we said there's no logical reason to distinguish between one and the other.
Mave doesn't carry?
Mav, not ma'avir, mav-em, mem, vez, ayin, hey. So further down on the Yomar, we're going to have a machlokas. Rav and Shmuel. Shmuel holds that mave refers to the tooth of an animal, and he's going to show a pasuk that refers to that. Ila Rav, I'm a mave ze'odam, and according to Rav, who says the definition of mave is a person causing damage, well, my ovis and my toldus isbe. Well, then you can ask, what ovis versus toldus are there in a person causing damage? So v'chitema av neir told the yoshin. You're going to say that maybe. The av would be when a person does a hezek when he's awake, and a tolda would be when he damages something when he's sleeping. No, v'atanan adam mord la'olam ben air ben yoshin. Later on in the Masechta, we learn that a person is always mord whether he's awake or asleep. Even if a person is asleep and he causes hezek, he can't say that I'm not responsible because I didn't know. By the way, the Yerushalmi points out, and this is brought lahalacha, let's say, for example, what we mean is, let's say when a person went to sleep, there were kelim nearby, and then in his sleep, he accidentally rolled over and broke them or something. If he went to sleep and there were no kelim around, and somebody went and put kelim there while he's asleep, yeah, he's going to be potter, because then you can't say he's more loyalam. Anyway, the point is, so clearly then, the tolda, so even if you're going to say that being asleep is considered a tolda, it's still exactly like the av. So therefore, the papa statement wouldn't work in connection with that. Ela akichoy v'niyoy. So you're going to say that maybe you're referring to a person caused damage with kichoy or niyoy. Now, there are a number of explanations what kichoy and niyoy mean. Both of them refer to things that come out of a person, like spit or saliva or other thing like that. Rashi explains that kichoy means saliva, and niyoy would be what drips out of his, would be mucus that drips out of his nose. Then there's a parenthetical note in Rashi that says that niyoy would be where a person like coughs or whatever and spits up phlegm out of his throat. Tosfos also discusses that similarly that niyoy would be, for example, when a person moves saliva, kichoy would be just the regular saliva that drips out of a person's mouth. Niyoy would be like when a person swirls it around in his mouth and then spits out a gob of it. Whatever, there are a few different explanations among the Shonim, but the point is, you're going to say that maybe kichoy and niyoy is referred to as a tolda of a person, and maybe there's a different din with them than if a person caused hezek directly. Well, the Gemara says, hechi dami. Well, what's the scenario? What exactly happened with this kichoy v'niyoy? If they cause damage as they're traveling, so a person spits and the spit directly lands on something and wounds it, then that's considered his koyach. Then therefore, of course, it has the same din as his own body and is going to be chayav. So of course, told the same kayotze behen. Fine, there is a... whether we consider the kichay v'niyoy to be a tolda or not is a discussion among Rishonim and Achronim. The Rif says that it's a tolda. Achronim are medayek from Rashi that maybe it means that it's an av. Whatever the case, the point is either way, it's obviously going to have the same din. No question, for example, whether you hit somebody directly with your fist or whether you throw a rock at him or in this case throw a gob of saliva at him. No question, it has the same din. So, are you talking about, let's say, that you spit on the ground and then somebody later on tripped over it? Well, Ben L'Rab, Ben L'Shmuel, Hainu Bur. What we said before, both Rab and Shmuel agree that if you maskir the nezek, then it becomes like Bur. You're surely maskir saliva of yours or mucus or phlegm or whatever that landed on the ground. So both Rab and Shmuel would agree that it's a Bur. And we already established the tool is a Bur, or like Bur. So what is the scenario that you want to say that spit or phlegm or whatever would be different than a person? So it's clear that the tulda of mava has to be like mava. That's according to Rav, and again, according to Shmuel, given that mava means shein, we already established the tuldas of shein or like shein, so therefore, again, no question that it's all the same thing. So maybe let's try to make Rapapa's statement work as far as fire. Maybe there's a difference between an av and a tulda within the hezek of fire. So told the age. Now again, the Gemara doesn't have to ask where we know the concept of fire as a hezek, because it's clear in the psukim that the Torah uses the word eish. He say to eish or motza kodesim. The only question is what are the toldas? So told us to eish mainu. Ilema avne sakina masoy sheinichen brish gagoy v'noflu beruach mitzuyah v'iziku. Are you going to say it refers to a person put a rock or a knife or a load on top of the roof and then it fell down in a normal wind and causes hezek? If it's a not normal wind, then you can say you're potter, because then you couldn't have expected it was going to fall. But if it's something that would be knocked off by a normal wind, then the person is chayev. Well, hey chidami, again, let's figure out what's the scenario. I bahadi de ozlu kamazki. If we're talking about they cause damage as they're falling, so the rock falls on somebody and injures him. Hainu esh. Well, that's exactly the same as fire. Because after all, maishna esh the koyach acham un urban. After all, when it comes to fire, there's another koyach involved. We learned in the Mishnah that unlike all the other ones, unlike shur and bur and maveh, those all happen on their own. You don't need an external factor. It comes to esh, you need an external factor. You need the fire to be carried by the wind in order to cause damage. Well, Tosfos actually discussed over there, Tosfos and other Rishonim discussed over there, does that create a kula or a chumra with it? Is it a kula that you could say, in other words, that look, I didn't know there was going to be this wind, therefore maybe I have less reason to be liable, and the Torah is saying doesn't matter, you're liable, or is it the other way around? You have more reason to be careful. An animal, only if it feels like it, is it going to do one of these other hezekim, as opposed to a fire is going to happen all on its own, where as long as you have that koyachah. Anyway, the point is, regardless how you learn, well, umamoincha, the fire is your mom, or shmurase alacha, and you're responsible to guard it. Haninami. So the same thing with a rock or whatever that you put on your roof and it fell down. If it causes damage as it's falling, haninami. You have another koyach mixed in with it, because you have to have the wind that knocked it down that creates the problem. And the rock is your mom, and you're responsible to guard it. So again, there's no logical reason to say that those should be any difference than Aish itself.
The fire doesn't have to be yours.
Well, that's true. Toast was pointed out. But actually, when we say mamoncha in some of these things, it doesn't necessarily have to be yours. By bur, we said the bur is not necessarily your mom. And again, because it's in Rosh Hashanah, you were after it. Fire also, Toast was pointed out, it's true. It doesn't really have to be your mom. And after all, Reuven takes Shimon's fire and lights Levi's thing on fire with it, true, he's going to be chayim. So you're right. When we're using mamoncha over here, we don't mean it has to be your mom, but it can be your mom. Anyway, so there's no reason to say that there was any difference. The Ella Tulda Ka'id to Eish Ka'ish. Evidently, then, the Tuldas of fire have to be exactly like fire. There's no reason to say that there should be any distinction. So therefore, by elimination, we're going to have to say that a Papa's statement to say that some Tuldas of the Menezikin are not like the others has to be referred to Regal. So Regal, the whole Kimna Tulda, the Regal, Regal. Didn't we say before that Regal includes, for example, the animal brushed against something and broke it, or something got tangled in its hair, or it's bit in its mouth, and it's whatever, and we said it's Chayev, so, and we said there's no logical reason to distinguish, so what are we bringing Regal back in over here? And the answer is, B'chatsi Nezek Tzroris. We're talking about a specific kind of Hezek that happens using the foot. Namely, the actual nezek of regel, the av nezikin of regel, is where the animal steps on something and breaks it. But now you can have where the animal, as it's walking, it picks up pebbles, and that pebble goes and flies off and hits something and breaks it. That thing is called tsrotus, and we're going to learn in detail in the next parak that a person pays only chatsi nezek for that. Unlike all the other ones where a person pays nezek sholem, here a person pays chatsi nezek to hirchsa gemiri la, it's a halacha l'moshe mi Sinai that you pay only chatsi nezek for that.
Tzodos.
put through. So therefore, now, in other words, now there's a difference that Rashi points out. There's a difference between that and Keren. When it comes to Chatzi Nezek of Keren, we said that it's a knas. The Torah penalizes him and makes him pay half Nezek, even though he could argue, wait, I didn't know my animal was dangerous. I had no way of knowing, because it's not normal for an animal to gore. Therefore, I shouldn't have to pay anything, and yet the Torah penalizes him to have to pay half. On the other hand, with Tzurdas, it's not considered knas. It's considered mamon. It's considered... Chatzi Nezek Tzurdas is not considered knas. It's considered mamon. It's considered a basic thing that you have to pay, just like any other kind of damage. Just to you have halacha l'moshe Sinai is you're only required to pay half. Yeah, that cloth. Something wrong with that cloth. I'll check it afterwards. Yeah, it's fine. Leave it. Anyway. So fine. So that's a halacha l'moshe Sinai that you have chatzin nezek in that case. So that would be what Rapapa means, that a tolda of one of the avos malachas is not like its av. In the sense, it's not like it in that regular, you would have to pay the whole thing, and here you're paying only half. So the Gemara asks, am I tolda a tolda the regal? Why are you calling it a tolda of regal specifically? Why not call it a tolda of one of the other avos? And the answer is, or in what sense is it considered a tolda? In what sense is it, given that you're not paying like the way you pay with regel, then in what sense is it considered a tolda? And the answer is, l'shalem min ha'aliyah. The answer is that when it comes to this chatzin nezek, you're going to pay min ha'aliyah, meaning in other words like this. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about, when it comes to keren, when it comes to an animal goring, the first three times, when it's a tam, you only pay migufa. You only have to pay, when you have to pay chatzin nezek, it's capped at the value of the animal. Meaning, so let's say the hezek of the animal goring, let's say the hezek was $500, so half of the hezek is going to be $250. What if the animal is worth only $100? Then you don't have to pay any more than $100. You give the other guy the animal, and we sell the animal and give him money, whatever, you pay $100 and that's that.
Then we'll kill him.
No, what we mean is Reuven's animal killed Shimon's animal. The damage was $500. Shimon's animal was worth $500. Now the nevela is worth zero, let's say, for whatever reason. So now the full nezek is $500. Chatzin nezek is $250. What if Reuven's animal that caused the damage is worth only $100? So Shimon cannot say, well, Reuven, you have to open up your pocket and pay me $250. Reuven can say, based on the psukim, no, I only have to pay you $100. That's the value of my animal. So therefore, you'll take my animal and that's that. On the other hand, when it comes to nezik shalim, and when it comes to payment for all other kinds of nezikin, then you have to pay the full amount, and it has to be min ha'aliyah, meaning you have to take money out of your attic if necessary and pay it. That's called min ha'aliyah. It can mean out of your attic. It can also mean min ha'aliyah, out of the best of your property, like idis, whatever. The point is, in other words, here, when it comes to chatzin nezik tzurdas, you have, it's a hybrid. On the one hand, you're only paying half the damage. So your animal kicked up pebbles, and those pebbles went and broke somebody's keli that's worth $10. You're only paying $5. However, the $5 is not from the behemoth itself. It's min ha'aliyah. In that sense, it's like regular. Just like if the animal stepped on the keli and broke it, you would be paying $10, which is the value of the keli. Here, where it kicked up pebbles and it broke the keli, you're paying $5. But either way, it's min ha'aliyah. It has nothing to do with the value of the animal. You have to take $5 or $10 out of your own pocket, out of your own nechassim, and pay. All of this, this is how Lachlan Meshul see that. Well, the Gemara asked, is that really so? V'homer boy Rava. Didn't Rava ask that very question? The boy Rava, chatzinezek tzuras, migufa mishalim, oymen ha'aliyah mishalim. Exactly that question. When it comes to tzuras, and you're paying chatzinezek, or you're paying from gufay, or are you paying min ha'aliyah? So how can Rapapa say as a definitive statement that Tzurus is a tolda which is not completely like regal, in that you're paying minha, in that you're paying chatzin nezek, but you're paying minha aliyah? And the answer is Rapapa knows this as a fact. Rava has a question. So Rava can be asking the question whether it is so. Rapapa knows for a fact that he pays minha aliyah. Okay, well, the question is, well, then, according to Rava, who's not sure whether Tzurus comes migufay like Keren, or whether it comes min ha'aliyah like Regal itself, so in what sense is it called a tolda of Regal? And the answer is l'poter v'shus harabim, in the sense that he'll be poter if it happens in Rosh Hashanah. Regal is potu in Rishus Rabim. It's only chayev. When is a person chayev for regal? Only birshus hanizek. Only in the if his animal goes into somebody else's property and tramples it or tramples kalim or whatever, that's when he's chayev. But if it's in Rishus Rabim, then he's the owner of the animal is potu. Because then he can say, what are you? You should have made sure your kalim are not on the ground over there for my animal to step on. So it's not my fault. So in that sense, Rava agrees the same thing is true as far as Srodas, that Srodas also you're going to be potter if it's in Rosh Hashanah for the same reason. So therefore, so even according to Rava, fine, Rava is not sure on what basis you're paying, whether you're capped with the value of the animal, which is Migufay, or whether you're not capped with the value of the animal, which is Minhaliyah. So Rava is not sure about that, but he does agree that Srodas, like Regal, applies only in the Rishos of the Nizek, and therefore he can also call it a Tulda of Regal. And Tosfos says also you have to consider the halacha l'Moshe Misinai that says this concept of chatzi nezek tzuras is coming to go easier on him. After all, mi'ikar adin, he should have had to pay, on the face of it, he should have had to pay full nezek. Now the Torah is giving him a break and saying he only pays half. Therefore, there's no reason to think. So therefore, Rava knows that it applies only in Rosh Hashanah. There's no reason to be machmir to in Rosh Hashanah Nizek, rather. There's no reason to be machmir in that regard more than Regal itself. On the other hand, when it comes to Migufay or Minhaliyah, that's his question. Does the halacha l'moshe misinai also include that kula, that it's capped at the value of the animal, or maybe not? Maybe in that sense, it's like other kinds of Nizikin where it's Minhaliyah, where it has nothing to do with the value of the animal. So that's why Rava would be unsure about Migufay or Minhaliyah, but he'd be certain that it doesn't apply outside of Rishos HaNizek, because the halacha l'moshe misinai is clearly coming to be mekel on the mazik rather than be machmir, given that's taking away from full mazik and reducing it to chatzi mazik in the case of tzurus. Yeah. Okay, so there's our answer, therefore. So there was our answer. When Rav Papa said that among the tulas of the Ovis Nizikin, some of them are like the Ovis and some of them are not, what he meant is most of the tulas are like the Ovis, as we worked out in the whole last blot, but you have one exception, a tulda of Regal, namely Tzurus, which is partly like Regal in that it applies only in Rosh Hashanah Nizik, and partly and also according to the Papa, that's Min HaAliyah, but it's partly not like it in that it's Chatzi Nezik rather than Nezik Shalom. Okay, so that's that, and then the next piece is gonna deal with the definition of mave in our Mishnah, and continue with dealing with what the Mishnah means when it says that each of these nizikin has a unique feature that the other one doesn't have. We're gonna start working that detail out.